Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Up North News with Pat Kreitlow starts now.
Well, here we are, and good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Stunts on this Friday, September 23rd. Our dad shirts are on, and we are ready to go. Coming up this morning, Sean Fedeplace from Main Street Alliance, Wisconsin, has an update on what small business owners are hearing and doing about the big election campaigns. Courier Newsroom political editorial director Carolyn Fiddler has the latest from her newsletter that tracks political news from all 50 states. Vice President Kamala Harris comes to Wisconsin and talks to Democratic attorneys general about the rights that they are truly on the front lines defending. The Republican candidate for state attorney general says Harris should be focused on the southern border, which begs the question, does Eric Toney know he's running for state attorney general, whose southern border duties are usually like keeping Bears fans from coming into Rock County? There's also a new national Marquette Law School poll that reaffirms how far out of the mainstream Republican politicians have become, even to Republican voters. State Superintendent Jill Underley gives her State of Education address. Tim Michaels, the Republican candidate for governor, gives a jerk response. And what better time than a Friday to mark National Old Fashioned Month? That'll be a little later. It's a little too early, Luke, to put that in the Up North News coffee mug. Or at least that's my story.
Wait, I thought we were celebrating all day. Of course I started with it in my...
Look at the size of that thing. Oh, that is a big travel coffee mug.
This was my Labor Day. This was my Labor Day present to myself.
Your Labor Day present to yourself? I did not realize that was a tradition.
It was
in the Mathers household to give Labor Day presents to oneself.
No, so there was an online deal and I was like, ooh, that's a good size mug. I needed a bigger mug and it was a good deal, so I got it.
All right. Again, coffee only, but we will talk old fashions later on, which I wouldn't have known about at all, but you know, Luke has an afternoon radio show and wanted to talk old fashions. So we talked old fashions yesterday afternoon. I even made one for him on the air on his show.
Let's correct it. You didn't make it for me. I pointed out.
I never said I was making it for you.
You just said I made one for him. You said I made one for him. That's all.
I made one for your show.
There we go. That was probably one of my favorite segments that I think I've done on the radio so far.
Was it really? Was it the apron I was wearing, the Holstein cow apron?
I think it was the whole. It was the whole premise.
having the booze bottles right here in the home office.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you kept your camera off, too, to keep it a surprise until we were on the air. So I gave my authentic reaction to you appearing on Dueling Tangents.
For me going the extra mile to make sure, I mean, if you're going to commit to a bit, make it a full commitment. You bet.
And then I celebrated the holiday as I was supposed to yesterday evening. So I had a couple with dinner.
Good, good. We last night did our part to close down the Mallard, which is a resort just up the river here from us on Lake Wissota. They'll be closing, I think, after this weekend, and we will be away. So last night was our last time to hit it till next summer. The pontoon will be coming out at the end of this weekend. And I see Travel Wisconsin already has their fall colors report out there. And I went and clicked on it, and Richland Center, you're on it. Apparently, the leaves are changing real quick in your neck of the woods for whatever reason. I don't know what you're doing there, but you are like this island compared to the rest of the state. I believe a little parts of Barron or Washburn counties were on there as well. And otherwise, we're just getting going with fall colors. There's still plenty of time, right? I hope. Here it is. It's up in the Cable area. In Ashland County and around Birchwood and Barron County and around the Oshkosh area is where colors are already at about 30% of peak. And so, it's going to be a little rainy this weekend, but hopefully, if not this weekend, then by next weekend, folks will be able to take a drive out and about and get to admire everything that's out there for our theater of seasons, as they say. Turning to sports, Colton Wong. That's it. That's the tweet. Colton Wong, boys and girls. Three home runs in a game.
He heard us talking about how Willy Adames was going to will the team into the postseason, and he said, "Hold my, hold my old fashioned. I got this one."
Drove in 5 runs. The score was 5-1. So it was Colton Wong 5, the Cincinnati Reds 1 on Thursday night. Now, unfortunately, the Brewers are still 2.5 games back of Philadelphia for the third NL wild card, but this is a good sign. Brandon Woodruff struck out 11 in 6 innings. Eric Lauer will get the start this evening. Game time is 5:40. And get this attendance at Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati, a place that loves to talk about how much they love baseball. They're one of the roots of baseball, the foundation of baseball. And for the sixth time this season, they had a crowd of under 10,000, 9,889 coming to watch the home team play in Cincinnati.
And I know there's probably not, I guess, the same effect, but it was Thursday night football in Cleveland. So I don't know if there's, you wouldn't imagine, I guess, a ton of Browns fans, but.
No. I mean, Bengals I would understand, but no, I think it's just getting, and again, your team is in the bottom. Your team is, you know, as bad as it gets. So I get it. It's getting late, but still we're holding on to hope here for Brewers to get. It'd be great to get 4 wins here and try to finally get that wild card spot. Sean Fetteplace from Main Street Alliance is coming up right after this break. You're up north. Dad Shirt Friday. They're not all Hawaiian prints or bowling shirts. Sometimes you have to wear your concert tee from a Steely Dan and Doobie Brothers concert that was held in the Summer of Living Dangerously tour of 2018. Then you throw a flannel shirt over that, and boom, you are part of Dad Shirt Friday. Yours looks fine too. You just got straight flannel. It works. It works for you, Luke.
It's the first fall Friday of the season, so I thought it was first fall flannel Friday.
I think the Onions made popular this meme of, you know, Mr. Autumn guy, and he's got his pumpkin spice latte coffee cup, and he's got the sweater on, and, you know, the glasses, and I'm wondering if I could pull that off for Halloween, maybe. You know, it's just be pumpkin spice latte guy from the Onion. We are hoping to be joined by Sean Fetteplace from Main Street Alliance in a bit. First, I kind of hinted at it yesterday. Wanted to let you know that one of the new stories up at UpNorthNewsWI.com deals with Senator Ron Johnson, who isn't really talking much about his record. He's trying to scare a lot of people about Mandela Barnes by distorting his positions and, you know, just using things that don't pertain to the average lives of average Wisconsinites. So if he won't talk about his record, we thought we should. And part of that record includes, you know, the justices and the judges that he has voted to confirm, people that he supports, because this is somebody who, when Roe v. Wade, abortion rights for women that had been guaranteed for nearly half a century, was repealed, Ron Johnson said, quote, "I'm fully supportive of what the Supreme Court did. I obviously confirmed the justices that handed down that correct decision." Now, Johnson knows his power as a U.S. senator is not limited to confirming Supreme Court nominees. This is somebody who has spent 12 years voting on nominees for federal judgeships. Many are lifetime appointments. And while he may be happy to talk about the justices, it's not clear if he shares that same enthusiasm for the positions taken by some of the judges he has voted to confirm over the years. Some of them have views that include opposition to marriage rights, marriage equality, opposed to the freedom to purchase contraceptives, or at least to have them covered adequately in insurance plans. And in some cases, even hesitancy to agree that the historic Brown v. Board of Education decision that ended segregation in public schools was correctly decided. So we took a look at some of the judges that Johnson has approved, information provided to us at Up North News, and the actions and statements that really indicate the people that Johnson has been supporting have a record of hostility toward women, toward minorities, toward LGBTQ rights. We focused, for example, on Judge Howard Nielsen, who was confirmed on a near party line vote, which was not the traditional way judges were confirmed. Usually they were vetted properly, found to have very little political bias one way or another because they focused on the law and often received bipartisan votes. But during the Trump years, many who were, you could argue, barely qualified, if that, were approved when Republicans controlled the Senate, but they were approved on basically party line votes. One of them was Howard Nielsen, whose work helped pave the way for the U.S. Justice Department during the George W. Bush administration to condone torture. Outside of government, Nielsen has also done work in private practice that was aimed at ending same-sex marriage rights in California. He's also been more lenient in other cases. For example, in 2020, he sentenced a bishop in the Latter-day Saints Church to 46 months for possession of child pornography, which is near the bottom end of sentencing guidelines. We highlighted Matthew Kaczmarek, who was confirmed to be a federal judge, also on a near party line vote. He was the focus of one news article that had the headline, "Senate Advances Trump Court Pick Opposed by Pretty Much Every LGBTQ Rights Group Ever." He was the deputy general counsel for the First Liberty Institute, a right-wing Christian advocacy group, and opposed protections for LGBTQ people in employment and housing and healthcare, implying that their concerns should not be taken as seriously as other forms of discrimination. He's called, including protections for LGBTQ people in the Violence Against Women Act, a grave mistake, and he has been sharply critical of the 2015 Obergefell decision that legalized same-sex marriage. In fact, in anticipation of the Obergefell decision, he wrote an essay in the National Catholic Register that opposed premarital sex and was riddled with quotation marks around the words like LGBT, full equality, quote unquote, gender identity, quote unquote, and marriage, quote unquote. So these are just a couple of the judges. There are several more listed in that article about people that Ron Johnson has confirmed to lifetime appointments as a federal judge. It's something that doesn't get brought up in campaign commercials, but it's something voters should be aware of and asking themselves if they would like six more years of that. Let's turn our attention to small business now across Wisconsin, and we've had the pleasure of talking to Sean Fetteplace in the past from Main Street Alliance about something that I consider to be the alternative to Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, in that Main Street Alliance actually represents actual small businesses across Wisconsin and has their interests at heart. He spends a lot of time on the road building membership and telling people about the issues involved in the news of the day because those folks are busy running a small business. And Sean joins us this morning by phone. Sean, how are you?
Hey, Pat, how's it going? I am so sorry I'm late. I've been en route traveling, and I'm glad we're able to connect now, and thanks for having me on.
Oh, yeah, no problem. We understand how it goes. And it's not as if Wisconsin is border to border, coast to coast, covered in a 5G signal. So if things drop out and such, we're totally good with that. What is it that's keeping you busy this week?
So I'm actually in the great state of Minnesota. And I'm here in the Twin Cities. We just had, now I'm managing one of our great organizers, Mel, who's based here in the Twin Cities. And so I got the chance to spend some time with her, and we had an event with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance and Open Markets, all about reigning monopolies and enforcing our antitrust laws. Imagine that. And so we were joined by Attorney General Keith Ellison, by the FTC commissioner, who just got confirmed this last summer. And so it was a great chance to talk about those issues. But I'm actually heading back to Wisconsin as we speak to do our final push here before the November elections.
Well, we'll come back to that, but I want to hit on that antitrust remark that you made, because we started the week talking with Hans Breitenmoser, a farmer from up in Lincoln County, about it was National Farmers Union lobbying day in Washington, D.C. a little over a week ago. And one of their big concerns for the rural economy, for farmers in particular, has been the lack of aggressiveness in cracking down on antitrust monopoly or near monopoly control of markets, and what that does to the supply chain, and what that does for the ability of farmers to, you know, get decent prices and to get their crops to markets at good prices. From more of a Main Street small business standpoint, what are the antitrust concerns that you're expressing that you and your members are concerned about?
Yeah, so I would just say that both parties have failed over the years in actually enforcing the antitrust laws that are on the books. And it's because there's been this sort of a corporate consensus that's developed over time that efficiency is more important than fairness. That, you know, if a large corporation can do something more effectively than a small business, then, you know, that small business just isn't very efficient and they should not exist. But the fact of the matter is a lot of those larger businesses use their power, they use their team of lawyers, they use that sort of corporate concentration to be able to, you know, have an unfair advantage in the marketplace. And so for us, it's just about how do we make the markets work? And you need to in order to make the markets work, you need to actually enforce the rules on the books to stop there being these huge mergers where companies no longer have to offer the same quality product, because if there's only one show in town, you kind of have to take what they give you and you don't have a whole lot of choice. And so consumer choice goes down as a result of, you know, these mega mergers. You have a lot of self-dealing where Amazon, for example, will see if you're a small business and you're selling on the Amazon marketplace. If they see you're doing really well, they'll make a generic version of your product, basically steal your intellectual property and put you out of business. And so there's just a lot of this kind of nonsense that's going on that really needs to be reined in. And thankfully, the FTC commissioner at this event talked a bit about, you know, we need to have FTC, a Federal Trade Commission, whose full job, they're the sheriff, so to speak, on the beats to enforce our antitrust laws and anti-monopoly laws, that fairness needs to be recentered when it comes to these things. And so optimistic about what we heard yesterday from him, and hopefully we're able to see some progress on this both at the state and through the executive branch at the federal level.
And keeping with a rural bent to things for a sec, you know, we Main Street businesses are found in, you know, every corner of the state. And your group has even put out new videos that highlight rural small businesses. Again, it kind of sounds like stating the obvious, but when we talk about a rural economy, it's not just, you know, ag producers being able to take things to market. There are so many small businesses that dot the Wisconsin landscape that you guys are also focused on to make sure that, you know, their voices are heard as well.
Yeah, and I mean, something I was talked about, there was R.F. Bowie was a grocer from South Dakota who was there with us yesterday, and he was talking about, you know, a lot of the shipping companies, they will prioritize the bigger accounts, you know, the Best Buys, the Walmarts, the Krogers, and then it makes it very difficult for the local folks to be able to do that. And furthermore, a lot of those vendors that work with them offer a much better deal. And so essentially you've got small businesses that are essentially subsidizing cheaper prices for big box stores, and the distributors are helping to enable that corporate consolidation to happen. That's the kind of anti-competitive behavior that we're talking about. And there's a lot of businesses in rural parts of Wisconsin, from Superior all the way to Viroqua and up to Door County, that are experiencing this in their areas. It was especially bad early in the pandemic, where people literally couldn't get their product to market because they're being pushed out by the big box stores. It is a bit better now, but it's still something that can't be allowed to happen.
Mm-hmm. Sean Fedaplace is with us from Main Street Alliance. We've got about a minute and we're going to take a commercial break. But, you know, to get to what's one of the real underpinnings, Sean, of Main Street Alliance, is that you've got people that they actually want to take care of their workforce. They don't see them as adversarial. And so that's why you're looking at things like, you know, say the Badger Care expansion, or, you know, minimum wage rules, because those kinds of things help small businesses do what you know they can't do against the big businesses if you don't have a functional government looking out for them. And so, you know, consequently, when we get back from the break, we're going to talk about some of those specific programs that you're working on, not just supporting at the state level, but also at the national level, you know, the things that are in the Inflation Reduction Act, for example. We'll get into that. And then we'll pivot to the election campaign itself, the GOTV campaign that you're working on to make sure that everybody takes time, even away from their busy small business, to make their voice heard by voting. Sean Fetteplace back with us on the other side of this break. You're up north.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
All right, back with Sean Fetteplace for a few more minutes, the Midwest Regional Manager for Main Street Alliance, Wisconsin. And I think it's worth noting, and Sean joins us by telephone here. Sean, you mentioned being in Minnesota, and so I think it's important to remind folks that Main Street Alliance is, this is not just a Wisconsin thing. This is across the country, isn't it, of helping small businesses feel like they have an advocate and to help them feel like they can be active themselves.
That's right. We have wonderful staff all across the country, and we're actually expanding quite a bit. We've added a significant amount of staff in the last few weeks. We're going to continue to be growing across the country. We'll be in new states here over the course of the next year, and just really, it's really exciting under the leadership of our executive director, Shonda Causer. We've, you know, we were already a great organization, but we're really stepping up to the next level, and that just helps us to be able to help and support more local small businesses. And so just really excited to be able to do that work.
So let's get to the political end of things again, the policy end of things, everything, again, from state level matters like Badger Care and minimum wage rules and such. Why? What is it about that power of numbers that Main Street Alliance has when you're advocating for things that typically mega corporations tend to oppose? What is it that is different at the small business level?
Yeah, so I would say, first off, small business owners have more in common with the staff that work with them than corporate CEOs. You look at what are the incentives? What do a lot of large corporations advocate for? They advocate for less regulation, less taxes, privatizing everything. And it's a very zero-sum game. Whereas with local small businesses, they, you know, are in the community. They know the local T-ball team that they help sponsor. They do local charity work, and they, you know, help support local jobs. And the money that they generate is kept back home. It doesn't go off to, Arkansas or New York or other states. It stays right there in the community. And so for small businesses, the things that they really care about is, can we get health care? Is it worth anything? Can we get childcare? Can folks take paid leave when they need to? Can you get capital access so that folks can get the money to grow their business? Can we rein in monopolies, like for the event that I was here over the course of the last few days? So the incentives are very different. The interests are very different. And so that's why small business owners need to specifically have an advocacy group like Main Street Alliance to work and build power with, so that we can help to level the playing field, because for far too long it hasn't been fair at all.
Yeah. And so last question then to get that, it depends on who's elected, who are the elected leaders. And so you really like to play a leading role in essentially get out the vote efforts to remind small business people to take time away and participate in their democracy. What has your program been like recently?
Yeah, so we were really excited to launch our Main Street Action program this last May. During the primary, we hosted three roundtables with the U.S. Senate candidates that were all attended. They were in Milwaukee, Madison, and in the Appleton area. That was a great opportunity for local small business owners and advocates to hear directly from the candidates about what they would do. We also had a candidate questionnaire where they directly answered and went on the record on the core issues I mentioned before. Now in the general election, there's a little bit of attention being spent on Wisconsin right now. Pat, I don't know if you've heard.
A little bit, yeah.
The governor's race. But yeah, the governor's race is going to be one of the closest in the country. The Senate race is going to be one of the closest in the country. The third congressional district seat for the House likely will help determine the majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. And so for us, it's like, okay, where can we really impact and elevate small business issues and get them on the record, but build that relationship so that whoever gets elected, that they've heard from those businesses and, you know, we're able to build power together. And so we are going to be hosting a U.S. Senate roundtable October 24th at 6:30 at Beckett's in Oshkosh. Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes has committed to attend. We are working on getting Senator Ron Johnson to attend as well. We're hopeful that he will do so. We are working with Governor Evers and Tim Michaels' campaigns to schedule a series of similar events in Milwaukee, Madison, and in Green Bay at local member businesses in those areas in October, and then also with Derek Von Orden and Brad Paff. Brad has committed to attend those events in La Crosse as well. And we're also going to be releasing our candidate questionnaires for all those. We'll share that out far and wide so folks can see where they stand on those core issues. And then we've been working with our members just this last Tuesday with National Voter Registration Day. And we had over 50 member businesses across the state reach out to 150,000 of their customers to encourage them to register to vote, to show up November 8th. And as far as I'm aware, absentee ballots, if folks were already signed up, just went out in the mail yesterday and are hitting mailboxes today. And so we just want to make sure that that small business voice is at the table, that they're hearing from folks, and that politicians across our state know that not every business organization is like WMC, where let's just like, you know, have no regulation, no accountability, nothing. Like, there's a lot of high road employers who really care about their staff and their communities. And we want to make sure that their voice is represented, you know, with those folks who are running for office, and that we make sure that they vote in November.
Excellent. And MainStreetAlliance.org is the main website. If people want to learn more, should they go there, or is there another route they should take as well?
Yes, go to MainStreetAlliance.org. You can also follow us at Main Street Tweets on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. And if you, even if you're not a small business owner yourself, I mean, if you are, great, sign up. There's no cost to membership. If you're a community supporter, if you believe what we're doing, feel free to sign up too to get our updates. And, you know, we'll be posting that event information on the website here in the next couple of days. And so keep an eye out, but go to MainStreetAlliance.org to find out more.
Fantastic. Hey, Sean, thank you so much for the time. Safe travels. Look forward to visiting again soon.
Cool. I look forward to getting back to the land of Lambeau. There's too many Vikings fans here for my taste, so I'll see you all soon.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks, Sean. Talk to you later. Sean Fedeplace, again, okay. Midwest Regional Manager of Main Street Alliance. And again, just a breath of fresh air, frankly, after years and years and years of having to put up with people who said they were the voice of business, but frankly were the voice of corporate bean counters. And you heard the real difference there. At the small business level, your workers aren't just a line on a spreadsheet. You know, it's when you've got that many employees at the big level, you know, you're just moving numbers around instead of realizing that you're affecting people. And the small business owners understand that these are people involved and that they themselves would love to maybe pay a better wage, but they also know that if their competitor down the street doesn't have to do it themselves, then, you know, they risk, you know, losing money on the deal. They might get the better employee, but it's still a higher cost to them. So what they're looking for is, you know, basically that floor, that floor that says, let's have paid leave for all. Most small businesses can't do that. They can't afford to provide paid family leave necessarily, but if we all do it together, then that's a win for everybody. It's a win for the families, and it's a win for all small businesses that don't have to compete that way. They can compete on, you know, the widgets that they're selling or the services that they're providing. And I was really, I found that interesting to hear the antitrust monopoly end of things, because again, we talked about it from a rural standpoint, and I'm not going to disagree with him when he talks about, you know, both parties could have done more. You know, there's not a lot of times that I would say, you know, that, you know, a presidential administration fell short in something. But, you know, for the Obama administration, I'd really hoped for more antitrust work, especially in farming. But, you know, and it's not like nothing happened. You had Republicans in Congress who helped prevent, you know, like the Pacific Trade Partnership from getting passed and what have you. But there is definitely room for more. And, you know, that's what we have to continue working toward if in fact we're going to have a healthy local economy. Next week, our guests include attorney Mark Thompson, who's a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, and Up North News reporter Christina Lori will talk about her interview with former White House photographer Pete Souza. She's been putting excerpts in the Up North News newsletter, and you can sign up for that at upnorthnewswi.com and click newsletter in the top banner.
And Mark Thompson also has a show on this great network of stations on Monday evenings. The Paul Revere Show is hosted by Mark Thompson on Monday nights at 7.
Is he talking about legal stuff there? Because when I heard that his show is called The Paul Revere Show, I thought it was like an oldies rock and roll thing. Like maybe he was a big fan of Paul Revere and the Raiders and just was spinning tunes. But you're saying it's more cerebral than that?
I believe it's more of the warning sign that Paul Revere gave. It's kind of like, hey, you got to pay attention to this.
One of the original text messages. the lanterns in the church tower.
More like a chainmail kind of thing, right?
It was a post. Yeah. It was a social media post for all to see, you know? and actually, I guess he was the original reposter. He was just reposting with every house that he passed on his horse.
All those retweets. The original retweet.
Boy, we're really stretching on this one, but, you know... You think about it, you don't often get to make that comparison.
No, I've asked myself the same question though too. Why the Paul Revere Show? So maybe we'll have to ask him next week when he's on your show.
We can definitely do that. Marquette Law School, we're used to hearing about the poll that is done on usually state matters, state candidates, state races, and that, you know, it's a you know, Wisconsin poll. But they do occasionally do a national poll, and they just did one and just put it out. And it is, it's enlightening. It's also a little, disappointing. For example, the top line from the latest Marquette poll, the national poll, finds that 33% of adults say they do not believe Donald Trump had classified or top secret material at his Mar-a-Lago estate this summer. That's one out of three people. 67% say he did have such documents, which, you know, is a great big number. But to me, still, that one out of every three people, one out of three, will tell you they don't think he had top secret information. Tells you, I guess, the power of the right-wing media bubble, or, you know, tells you about gullibility. I don't know what it says other than, come on, people. Work with me here.
That was kind of Trump's baseline number always, though, right? Like
it always has been.
He always had 33% support when people polled, like right around that 30 to 35 range. But it's also one of those things like, I understand why the pollster, especially Charles Franklin, like asked the question, because people will inform their beliefs on that. But it's also like one of those things where if you polled a set of Americans and 33% said, well, the sky is orange or the sky is green and it's not, it's blue. It's not the fact. Like you're pulling on somebody's relative belief of what is fact rather than asking what the facts are. And it's the facts were that there were classified documents and 42 missing empty envelopes of top secret information at Mar-a-Lago. That's a fact. And just because somebody doesn't believe in it, that's... It's scary, but I also don't know what it means.
It's you say it's a fact. We'll have to agree to disagree, or, you know, whatever. They did ask about, you know, would they support Donald Trump or Joe Biden if there was a rematch, and Biden tops Trump 40% to 36%, with another nearly 20% saying they'd want someone else and 6% saying they wouldn't vote at all. And the number is just about the same if Florida Governor Ron DeSantis were to run against Joe Biden. Again, Biden would get 40% and DeSantis would get 35 compared to Trump's 36. So again, basically about the same. So, you know, there is that pool essentially that Trump can count on no matter what, even as he continues to lose court case after court case, as more things are discovered about, you know, what he did, what he didn't do. There is that cohort. So to come back to Sean Fetteplace's closing message, your voice is so important. And especially when you know what one out of three other voters believe out there, don't forget to vote. And yeah, ballots are hitting the mail starting today. We'll be back. You're up north. Morning up here on Lake Wissota. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Good morning to everybody, whether you're listening on the radio in Wausau, Amory, Richland Center, wherever, online or on demand as a podcast. And my goodness, there's so many options for listening to us as a podcast, listening live over the TuneIn app. We really appreciate all of it. Some of you are watching live or after the fact on Facebook or Twitter at our Wausau flagship station, Bull Falls Radio. And if you'd like to get in touch with the show, the number is 715-388-7155. Again, 715-388-7155. And our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. I was speaking about the new national Marquette poll that had been done. And the abortion questions show, of course, that there is a divide in the United States on the question, but not entirely 50-50. And in fact, in some ways, it's pretty clear that some of the more extreme right-wing candidates like Tim Michaels are way out of the mainstream of even where their fellow Republicans are. Overall, a majority in this national poll by the Marquette Law School, 61% oppose the decision by the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade. 30% favored that ruling. So again, back to our just about one out of three people. 30% favor the ruling. 10% said that they don't have an opinion. There's been little change in preferred policy with respect to abortion. For example, do you think it should be legal in all cases, most cases, illegal in most cases, illegal in all cases? And the numbers haven't moved a lot. So 30% roughly think. Says 37% think it should be legal in most cases. 25% think it should be illegal in most cases. And only 6% believe that abortion should be illegal in all cases. Then they get down to some of the things that could happen with Roe being repealed through the Dobbs decision and what they think of it. For example, 82% say states should not be able to make it illegal to travel to another state to obtain a legal abortion. The troubling part of that is that 18% say the state should be able to make it illegal for a woman to travel to another state where abortion is legal. If you break it down by party, in terms of Republicans, it's basically, you know, 75-25, 75% say a state should not make it illegal, but still about 25%, one out of four Republicans, say they would support making it illegal to travel across a state border. And then they asked in terms of, you know, making it illegal to obtain an out-of-state prescription medicine that induces an abortion. Again, 76% of the people say states should not make that illegal, while 23% say states should be able to do so. And by the way, that includes 40% of Republicans, 40% who say that states should be able to make it illegal to order out-of-state prescription meds that induce an abortion. So when you have somebody like a Tim Michaels, who is on the far end of that, you see just how far out of the mainstream that he is with Republican voters in the Midwest. I'm not here to tell you that what happened in Kansas last month is necessarily going to happen here and in other states. But to this point, all of the polling doesn't indicate that it won't happen. The number of women registering to vote are, you know, outnumbering men substantially. You see a level of activity. You see a level of donations that show that this is not still not an issue that is simply going to, you know, fade between now and Election Day. And I know I said my early prediction on Tim Michaels was that he was going to, you know, moderate his position, or at least try to appear that way. And he hasn't done that yet. He's actually tried to say very little about it. You note that, you know, he's always trying to change the subject back to crime or to something else. And well, Ron Johnson, I mean, he's had every position imaginable, you know, in terms of being against a woman's right to choose. But should it be a national thing? Should it be a state thing for the legislature? Should it be a state voter thing? So, again, he's trying so hard to get the conversation turned anywhere else. And, you know, hence you got that focus on crime. And it's made for an extremely ugly campaign. We spent a lot of time calling out the ads yesterday, but it doesn't mean that they're going to go away, but that we just continue to help you understand so that you may help other people understand, you know, what the actual issues are at play. The Marquette poll, the national one, also asks about the public's impression of the Supreme Court, and it's never been lower. The latest poll finds 40% of adults approve of the job the Supreme Court is doing, 60% disapprove. Now compare those numbers to, you know, 2020. So just 2 years ago, when it was 66% approve and only 33% disapprove. I mean, it has been just, you know, a huge flip. And in terms of, you know, confidence in the Supreme Court, the number of people who have a lot of confidence in the Supreme Court has gone down, and the number of people who have very little confidence have gone up. And it goes just the way that you think it would, that they believe the court has become much more conservative and much more political. When asked, you know, how would you describe the court as in terms of very conservative, somewhat conservative, moderate, somewhat liberal, very liberal. Again, just 3 years ago, 50% of those polled said they consider the Supreme Court to be moderate. 50% said the Supreme Court is moderate 3 years ago. That's down to 27% now. With, again, you have, let me do some quick math here, 64% say the court is either very conservative or somewhat conservative. So we know that. We would tell you that because we watch, we see the decisions that are handed down, but you don't know what is the general public's perception of it. And for the general public to understand how far that pendulum has swung, again, tells you that there's a very strong likelihood this translates into voter turnout come November for people who, as was said yesterday, have just seen enough and finally, you know, just want to get engaged. We have a cool condition. I was trying to come up with a way to say, is it ever going to warm up again? You know, maybe,
not,
but, you know.
Not until May.
Not until May. Right. No, I'd been, you know, I think our 80s are pretty much done with. And so we can't really pin down the rain either, just that there's chances of rain. But I'll tell you, again, for somebody who had lived in the Caribbean, I see now there's a new storm forming, and the target is right on the Cayman Islands where I used to live. And I'll tell you what, you see something like that down there, it really puts a rainy weekend into perspective. We can deal with that here. So hope you get a chance to enjoy it, whatever it is you're doing. We're going to take a break, have more in our next hour. You're up north.